After Perry's parole, 4 months elapsed. Months of rattling around in a fifth-hand $100 Ford, rolling from Reno to Las Vegas, from Bellingham, Washington to Buell, Idaho. And it was in Buell, where he had found temporary work as a truck driver, that Dick's letter reached him. Friend P. Came out in August, and after you left, I met someone. You do not know him, but he put me on to something we could bring off beautiful. A cinch. The perfect score. Until then, Perry had not imagined that he would ever see Dick again. Or Willie J. But they had both been much in his thoughts, and especially the latter, who in memory had grown 10 feet tall, a gray-haired wise man haunting the hallways of his mind. "You pursue the negative," Willie J. had informed him once in one of his lectures. "You want not to give a damn, to exist without responsibility, without faith or friends or warmth." In the solitary, comfortless course of his recent driftings, Perry had over and over again reviewed this indictment and had decided it was unjust. He did give a damn, but who had ever given a damn about him? His father? Yes, up to a point. A girl or two, but that was a long story. No one else except Willie J. himself. And only Willie J. had ever recognized his worth, his potentialities, had acknowledged that he was not just an undersized, over-muscled half-breed, had seen him, for all the moralizing, as he saw himself. Exceptional. Rare. Artistic. In Willie J., his vanity had found support, his sensibility shelter, and the 4 month exile from this high carat appreciation had made it more alluring than any dream of buried gold. So when he received Dick's invitation and realized that the date Dick proposed for his coming to Kansas more or less coincided with the time of Willie J.'s release, he knew what he must do. He drove to Las Vegas, sold his junk heap car, packed his collection of maps, old letters, manuscripts, and books, and bought a ticket for a Greyhound bus. The journey's aftermath was up to fate. If things didn't work out with Willie J., then he might consider Dick's proposition. As it turned out, the choice was between Dick and nothing. For when Perry's bus reached Kansas City on the evening of November 12th, Willie J., whom he'd been unable to advise of his coming, had already left town. Left, in fact, only 5 hours earlier, from the same terminal at which Perry arrived. That much he had learned by telephoning the Reverend Mr. Post, who further discouraged him by declining to reveal his former clerk's exact destination. "He's headed east," the chaplain said, "to find opportunities. A decent job, and a home with some good people who were willing to help him." And Perry, hanging up, had felt dizzy with anger and disappointment. But what, he wondered when the anguish subsided, had he really expected from a reunion with Willie J.? Freedom had separated them. As free men, they had nothing in common, were opposites, who could never have formed a team. Certainly not one capable of embarking on the skin-diving south-of-the-border adventures he and Dick had plotted. Nevertheless, if he had not missed Willie J., if they could have been together for even an hour, Perry was quite convinced, just knew, that he would not now be loitering outside a hospital waiting for Dick to emerge with a pair of black stockings. Dick returned empty-handed. "No go," he announced, with a furtive casualness that made Perry suspicious. "Are you sure? Sure you even asked?" "Sure I did." "I don't believe you. I think you went in there, hung around a couple of minutes, and came out." "Okay, sugar. Whatever you say." Dick started the car. After they had traveled in silence a while, Dick patted Perry on the knee. "Oh, come on," he said. "It was a pukey idea. What the hell would they have thought? Me barging in there like it was a goddamn five and dime?" Perry said, "Maybe it's just as well. Nuns are a bad luck bunch.